Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Back in the saddle. Oh, this is the most comfortable chair for me. Seriously, I know it doesn't look comfortable, but for me, anytime there's a chair behind a microphone, that's the most comfortable chair for me. Okay, guys, let's do this. Reggie in the booth. Wow, look at those needles jumping today. I don't know, is there some extra kick in my voice? I don't know. They look healthy as ever. Okay, let's do this thing. I'll do my three S's, and you get everything done there, and we'll jumpstart this thing. Here we go. Star, smile, and strong. Three S's. Put it in the book there, Reggie. Episode 192. Ready? Good. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNplus.com or wherever you listen and download your favorite podcast. It's got to be there because this is one of your, if not your favorite podcast. I certainly hope so. Don't forget, wherever you download, subscribe to that platform and rate this podcast. And yes, actually the most important of all may just be to tell your friends. Pass it on. Send a link, send a message, send good tidings. Send them the podcast and tell them to listen, because you do, to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Word of mouth works better than anything else in this interesting little subworld of the podcast, which really is gaining more and more popularity every week. And so hopefully you can help us gain just as much popularity by telling your friends. As usual, your loyalty and devotion is much appreciated. If you like what you hear, don't forget, go to WGNplus.com. You go to the entertainment section, hit the prompt for Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and you can find all previous 191 episodes there, too. So you can go crazy listening to the former podcasts while you enjoy this one, number 192. 192! Inching ever closer to the magic number, I guess, until we hit another milestone. Number 200, which now is what, about 8 weeks away, 2 months away? So sometime in March or so, early April, depending on how many. I know we have a leap year this year, extra day, use it well. But we'll be approaching the number 200 mark. And in May, we'll be approaching the four-year mark of doing this podcast. I really cannot believe that it's been that long. 4 years. It seems like it has just flown by. But May of 2016 is when episode one of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic first, I guess, was posted. You can't say hit the airwaves. It's kind of radio, right? Anyway, thanks again for your continued loyalty. It's much appreciated, as I said before. So let's get right into it here in episode 192. I'll have to say this one is an interesting topic, I think, because it spans a lot of different mini topics. And so often we find that in sports, things do become reflective of our lives in general, or our community in general or our behavior in general. Sports have become such a major part of our culture that they cannot help but not only influence, but also reflect what goes on with people. And I'll be talking a little bit of sports here, but please, if you're not sports minded, it doesn't mean you have to go away, because the bigger issue is not so much sports, but something that we all face probably almost every day of our lives. So I'll get a little specific. How is that? They call that a tease in the business. I won't tease you any longer. I don't know if for sports fans or baseball fans especially, I'm sure you've heard about the latest scandal that is not only rocking the baseball world, it's rocking the sports world, and ironically is making more news about baseball than the sport itself. And the sport itself doesn't even start its new season, even in spring training, for at least a month. And the regular season probably begins this year again a little earlier, probably the last week of March or early April. I'm not exactly sure, but my point is 2 months away, and baseball is stealing the headlines in the sporting world, even though, as we sit here, three other major sports are in season. One of them is in the throes of its ultimate game, the Super Bowl, and it's baseball, the one dormant sport right now in the winter that is dominating the headlines. And it is so because not only of a scandal that certainly has major implications for baseball itself, but as I said earlier, also, I believe, starts to force us to take a look in the mirror. And so often, we don't like to look into that deep, dark, truthful mirror, but we have to, we should, about ourselves personally sometimes, and about our culture as a whole. So a few weeks ago, it was revealed about the Houston Astros, over the last 4 or 5 years, one of the best teams in baseball, in both record and in World Series, winning the World Series. And it rocked the world of sports, especially baseball, because it had implications as if the Astros really won all their games in those seasons legitimately, and if they won the World Series legitimately. Now look, cheating goes on, sadly, in every aspect of our lives. As I said before, this is not just sports. This is the human condition. We are an imperfect species. We are an imperfect animal. And so oftentimes we do look for the easiest way to do things, and we cheat. And sometimes we bend the rules. Sometimes we snap the rules. Sometimes we break the rules, and sometimes we obliterate the rules. And sometimes we do look for the easiest way out. And the word cheating, I think we have to really start to either fully define it or redefine it or agree what it means going forward. And so much of what we have to look at ourselves in that deep, dark, truthful mirror has been occurring in the last 15 years or so, because of the internet. And I'm sure you're saying, Jim, again with the internet, why does everything come back to the internet with you? Well, I think it's not because I want it to. I'm pointing it out that I think we have to agree that we have to. The internet is such a powerful tool, unlike any tool that we have had in our culture. Now you say, Jim, I mean, it's not as powerful as an atom bomb or a nuclear bomb. Well, define power. The internet is the most powerful and influential tool, invention, technology, whatever you want to call it, that I believe has influenced the average person and our everyday lives more than anything in the last century, because it gets to the heart of who we are. Most other technologies have allowed us to do things easier or more efficiently, or provided entertainment to us, but in many ways, they were, from our standpoint, very passive in that they did it for us, and we were the recipient of their work. Machines help things, do things easier for us, whether it was, you know, or inventions, whether it was the light bulb making things easier for us to see, whether it was the car making it easier for us to have transport from one place to another, or whether it was the train to go long distances, or the plane to certainly go around the world if need be. All these inventions in the past assisted us in doing things better. But the internet, and we were passive. We allowed them to do the work for us. But the internet, especially social media, you know, the internet on its face, I really should probably redefine that a little closer to say social media. The internet is obviously the delivery platform for social media. So yes, the internet in its invention kind of mode did help us communicate easier and did provide us access to information easier and instantly, and the amount. So yes. But social media was really the turning of that knob to, it goes to 11, doesn't it? Everything else went to 10, but social media really put our entire culture up to 11. And fans of Spinal Tap will get that reference. Because it played into our ability to interact and really show our true selves. You know, things like Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and all these things where people's opinions and their voices are heard. And yes, I understand that that's a great democratic thing to allow freedom of speech all over the world. But as we've seen, without a lot of rules or without a lot of supervision, we get ourselves in trouble. Now you're saying, Jim, how the heck are you connecting the baseball scandal with the internet? Well, on two points. Because of the fact that in the revelation of this baseball sign-stealing scandal, we are getting many different opinions from many different quarters of our culture. And we are starting to, I don't know, I guess peel away the curtain to show just how we think as people. We are revealing ourselves. We are taking a look into that deep, dark, truthful mirror. We are exposing how we really feel as a culture. And secondly, the technology itself that we have available today played a major role in the baseball sign-stealing scandal. Now, just as a quick primer for this, if you're not aware of what happened, if you're not necessarily a baseball fan or a sports fan, I'll give you just a quickie just to let you know what we're talking about. But as I said, I want to talk about the major point here is cheating. How do we view cheating? How do we define cheating as a culture? And do we have to start redefining it, or do we have to begin to stand up to it or face what we believe and then decide, are we right? Because we're starting to hear what a lot of different people think about cheating. And this scandal in baseball has opened up that Pandora's box. But specifically, it was revealed that the Houston Astros baseball team, which suddenly, over the last several years, became one of the best, maybe because of the fact that they were stealing signs. Now, people may say, what are you talking about? In baseball, there is a lot of nonverbal communication going on, almost on every pitch of a game. I played baseball for many years, and I was the catcher. And so the catcher is one of the main positions that deal with signs. You may not know it. When I go to watch a baseball game, I'll bring my wife or somebody that watches baseball but is not, you know, fully tuned in, and I'll be sitting there, and there you are outside in a beautiful day, you know, at a beautiful baseball park like in Chicago at Wrigley Field, one of the classic shrines to baseball. And the sun is out, and, you know, there's that little hum of a large crowd, and, you know, it's a beautiful atmosphere, right? And there's a man on first base, and the batter is in the batter's box, and the pitcher is there, and there's the catcher, and there's all the players. And it looks all very quaint and very laid back and just very benign, right? And I always point out to whoever's with me that may not be a huge baseball fan, you don't even know the stress and the complication and the fear and the tension that's happening right now on that field. Outwardly, it looks like it's the most boring, relaxing, uneventful sport, which is why it's kind of begun to fall as our national pastime. Because in today's world, we are so quick, everything's so fast-paced, and we like, you know, action. And baseball has moments of action, but there's a lot of downtime. That's why football has become so popular, because football, we know every 45 seconds a new play will happen right in the middle of our TV screen. Every 45 seconds, a new play, more action. Some plays more exciting than the others, but at least we know something's going to happen in the next 45 seconds. You cannot predict that in baseball. You cannot predict that in any other sport except football. We have this timing. They have to get the next play off in 45 seconds. And so that's why I think baseball in today's culture has lost a lot of its popularity, especially with younger people, because now video games are almost 40 years old, if not older. And so we've had a generation and a half, almost two generations, that have been raised on video games where they're made for action. Something's always happening, and our movies happen quicker with bigger explosions, and we are just more of a, you know, of an action-based culture. And baseball, unless you played it or really appreciate it as a fan and really get into the game, looks like it's just a bunch of guys, you know, throwing a ball and running around. And every so often, something interesting happens. But signs, nonverbal communications going on a baseball field are happening on every pitch, every game, every pitch, every pitch. There are nonverbal communications going on that do influence what's going to happen. Ultimately, who's going to win? The most obvious that even a layman can see is that the pitcher is looking at the catcher to decide what's the next pitch they're going to send down. And the catcher is in his crouch and using his hand in between his legs there, flashes a series of signs. One is usually a fastball. Two is usually a curve. Three or four, depending on what the pitcher has. Which side he pats his thigh on tells which side of the plate, outside or inside. There's a lot going on there. And that's the most obvious. That's the most one you could, even on television, you could see that. When they have the center field camera shot, you can see the catcher flashing the signs between his thighs, and you could see the pitcher either nodding or shrugging, meaning, I don't want to throw that pitch. I want to throw another one. That's the most obvious. But that's a key thing, because am I gonna, you know, how are we going to make sure that this batter does not get a hit? But you also have to remember that before that sign is given, many times the manager in the dugout is signaling non-verbally through some kind of hand signal, whether it's touching a cap, touching an eye, touching a nose, making some kind of a verbal thing that seems innocuous. Come on, you know, two claps or something. There's some kind of sign many times from the pitch, from the manager to the catcher to let him know what pitch the manager wants thrown. Many times the catcher will be the one who calls the game, but there are some times that the manager will also direct the catcher to call a specific pitch. And then the pitcher can decide which one he wants to throw. So there's that dynamic right there. There's three people involved on every pitch, theoretically. You'd never know that if you're just watching it, but that's going on. One guy is signaling the other guy. The other guy is signaling the other guy. Now, same thing. The batter is up to bat, and he is looking at the third base coach, most likely. And if you ever see that at a baseball game, you'll see the third base coach go through a series of signals. Some of them have some meaning. Some of them are decoys. Why? So that the signals can't be stolen. Okay, here we go. So there's a series. So sometimes the third base coach is touching his hat, touching his thigh, spitting, whatever, and a series of, he looks like he's got some kind of, you know, ticks going on. He's touching everything, looking everywhere, spitting, you know, grabbing, groping, touching, pointing, whatever it is. Sometimes that means a lot to the batter. Sometimes it's just for show to throw the other team off, to think that something's going on. And that third base coach is sending a message, once again, from the manager who has signaled to the third base coach on the other team, I want this guy to bunt, or I'm going to, if they say there's a man on first, I'm going to, just so the batter knows, that man at first is going to start running as soon as that pitch is thrown, and I want that batter to swing that bat and whatever the pitch is, because I want to make sure that he makes some contact, because if not, that batter, the runner, might get thrown out at second base. So that's called a hit and run. Or like I said before, I might want him to bunt, or I might want him to not swing at this next pitch. This pitcher seems like he's not throwing any strikes here, and just so the batter doesn't go swinging at some bad pitches, I'm going to tell the batter that I don't want him to swing at the next pitch, regardless of where it is. That's called the take. And so he's taking the pitch. He's not swinging at it. So the manager will, with a series of signs, communicate to the third base coach, and he then will communicate to the batter. Bunt, swing, don't swing, hit and run, whatever it may be. Suicide squeeze bunt. This man from third is going to be running. Be aware of that. He's going to be running down the third base line. You can't swing the bat. You may kill him on this next pitch. So you better get that sign, because this guy's going to be running at full speed. We want you to bunt or get out of the way. There's a lot of important things here, from safety as well as the strategy of the game. My point is, there's a lot of unspoken communication going on on a baseball field on every pitch. And it does have implication as to what happens in the game. And a part of the baseball game has always been that, you know, if I can get, in any sport really, any advantage that a player can have, they will go for. Right now, this is where we start to get into. It's kind of an unwritten rule, right? Now, I don't know. Is that cheating or is it not cheating? But in baseball, let's just stay there for a while. The unwritten rule is that, you know, if you can get an advantage, you take it. At least that's the way the baseball players feel. And if I can get away with it and it's successful, then I'll keep doing it. Because they're looking for any advantage they can to win the game and to do well for themselves and do well for their team. If they do well for themselves and their team, they get a big raise, they make a lot of money, and they're able to buy a big house and send their kids to a great school and provide their families with a great life. Yeah, I mean, this is, that's all that's going, that's what's going on when you watch a baseball game on every pitch. You don't think that a baseball player's wife and kids are being, you know, taken into consideration when a baseball player is swinging at a pitch. But he is, ultimately, farther down the line. All sports people, athletes, are looking for an advantage. There are rules to the game, and they are looking for any advantage to win and be better. And sometimes they will break those rules or severely bend those rules. But as I said, in baseball, people are questioning, well, what's the big deal about this sign stealing? Why is this rocking the baseball world so much? Believe me, as a player, and I will tell you as a catcher, people say, well, what's the big deal? Why can't the pitcher just throw any pitch he wants? They don't even need all these signs. And you take away this the threat of sign stealing and take away the temptation of it. Well, it's not that easy. A catcher has to know what pitch is coming. It's a huge difference. Sometimes you'll see when the signals get crossed, the pitcher thinks he's throwing a fastball and the catcher thinks he's throwing a slower pitch or a curveball that's going to move or break, and he is anticipating that. So if you're expecting a ball to come at you at, say, 70 miles an hour and dip and move, and instead a pitch is coming straight at you at 100 miles an hour, and it gets there within a second, you don't have much time to react. That's a projectile. So the pitcher and the catcher have to be on the same page as to what pitch is being thrown. Only someone who has never played the game would not understand that. But I'm telling you, it's not even a joke. It can result in injury, certainly a misplay, but injury most likely for the catcher because he won't be able to react quick enough. He will not catch that ball. It may hit him. It may hit the umpire. It may, who knows what, because if he's waiting, as I said, for a slower pitch to come, and all of a sudden this bullet comes flying at him, and he's not ready for that faster pitch, coming at him 30 miles an hour quicker, and it's right in his by his arm or by his foot or by his leg or you know, by his groin or whatever, boom, he will get hit. So, yes, it is. It's not even a question. Don't let anybody tell you that, oh, well, a pitcher doesn't, he can throw anything he wants. No, it's just that's an uninformed viewpoint. So that is a key communication route between the pitcher and the catcher. And it's also a key for the batter. If the batter knows what the next pitch is going to be, there's no guarantees he's going to hit it. Don't forget, in baseball, the hardest thing to do is hit a baseball in the game. It all revolves around that. Even the best players, the best who have ever played, have only done it on a daily, regular basis, most times even in a 20-year career every season. The best have been able to do it 3 to 3.5 times out of 10. Once again, if you don't know anything about baseball, maybe you've heard when they talk about averages. What's his batting average? Well, by that, the batting average means how many times you get a hit out of 10 times at bat. The best hitters in the game's history basically do it 3 out of 10. That's how you get the batting average of 300. It's basically 30%. The best ever on a consistent basis get a hit 3 out of 10 times. Now, if you did that on a test, if you were in school and you got 30%, that would not be very high of an average, would not be very impressive. 30% on a test is not very good, but that's how hard it is to hit a baseball in the major leagues. The best person, the best players have only done it 3 out of 10 times in a regular season over a career. There have been a few 400 hitters in one season every so often that have managed to average 4 hits every at bat. Very few at the end of a season, but certainly not through a career. Nobody ended their career with a 400 average. 3 to 3.5, 350, you know, when you start to do all the, division and multiplication. But at the end of the day, basically you could say that 3 out of 10, and you are multi, if you can hit a ball 3 out of 10, three times out of every 10 times you bat, in today's world, you will be a multi-millionaire. That's how hard it is, and that's how important it is. So once again, anything that I can do to raise that probability of me getting a hit, I'll do if I'm a baseball player. In theory, right? I want to get a hit. I'm only going to get 3 out of 10. I hope to even get that. So if I know what the next pitch is, that's a huge advantage. Because the whole idea, as I said before, there's so much strategy going on every pitch. Pitcher is throwing a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. He throws 2 of those. The batter now gets a sense of how fast that pitch is coming in. Maybe he begins to acclimate to that. And then all of a sudden you throw a slower one, and he starts to swing a different way. If he's waiting for a curveball, he's waiting for it longer. He will wait. It's going to take longer to get there. He won't swing, and boom, if you throw a fastball and he's waiting for a curveball, boom, that ball's already in the catcher's glove, and vice versa. But if he knows that a slower pitch is coming or a faster pitch is coming on that next one, he knows how to adjust to that. And now he's just raised his odds of getting a hit. No more guesswork. I don't know what he's throwing. I see, if I'm a batter, he's only 60 feet, 6 inches away from me, and I see the pitcher shaking his head or nodding, but I'm really not sure what he's going to throw. I have to guess and react in a matter of seconds. That's what makes baseball such a difficult sport for being a hitter. You have literally a second to adjust, and that ball is coming at you at different speeds, different motions. But if you know what's coming, it's not going to guarantee you a hit, but it's certainly going to raise the probability. So, sign stealing becomes major, especially in the most important one, what pitch is coming next. Oh, yes, it's important for what's going on with that third base coach, like I told you earlier. But the most key sign in baseball is between the pitcher and the catcher, because it affects the main center of the game, the batter, and putting the ball in play. The Houston Astros, and here's where technology comes in. I'm telling you, folks, you got to stay with me on all my little stories here, because all the little pieces do eventually come together in this puzzle. The Houston Astros, now for years, before I mention the Houston Astros, so for years, everybody's trying to get an advantage. And so sign stealing was a part and is a part of the game because everybody's looking for an advantage, right? By the sheer use of signs, I'm trying to be deceptive to the other team. Human nature is, if you're trying to be deceptive, I want to crack your code, right? We're always looking to crack the code, whether it was, you know, with spies in the war or anything else. We're always trying to crack the code. So there's some, wherever there's deception in a human equation, there will always be the need or the want to break the code. Wherever there's some kind of signals being given, some kind of nonverbal communication being communicated, we will always try to break that code to get the advantage because we are human and we want to win. That's at our core. We want to win can also be dotted line to survival of the fittest, which goes back to the cavemen, which goes back to the first, you know, single-celled life form that nature didn't destroy, but was able to survive. So it is at our core. Wow, Jim, you're really getting deep here. You need to think about it like that sometimes. Winning a game in sports, getting a promotion at work, whatever you may call it, is really survival of the fittest and really does go back to our genetic code. Ah, another code to be broken, right? So anyway, sign stealing has always been a part of the game because players are looking for an advantage. Now, before the technology age, basically the way teams would steal signs is that they would have maybe a few players or coaches on the bench watching the different sign givers and receivers, just watching them in the course of a game, see what they're doing, and then see the outcome and say, you know, I think I know what their bunt sign is. Because every time the third base coach touches his hat three times and then touches his left arm, I've noticed now in the last three times they've bunted, he did that. And believe me, the signs that they're stealing are very complex. When you look at that third base coach, as I told you earlier, he's going through a series of touches and gropes and spittings and everything. And many times they mean nothing, and many times they do mean something, and they are hidden in that whatever I do, you don't even pay attention to until I touch my cap two times. If I touch my cap one time and do a series of things, that's just to throw the other guys off. But if I touch my cap two times on the brim and then slap my knee, then whatever comes next, that's the important sign to pay attention to. So there's a signal within a signal. All because they don't want the signs to be stolen. Same way between the pitcher and the catcher. In the good old days, before television, when they had that center field camera, which is the best view to see the pitcher and the catcher and the batter, that's why you see it, but you can clearly see from that vantage point over the pitcher's shoulder into the catcher's between his legs, you can clearly see the hand signals going on. The catcher flashing those signs, you can see those. So before television, it was probably a lot harder, but I can tell you, having played baseball, any baseball player knows, even if you're at second base, you can see what sign. You're not that far from the pitcher if you're at second base. So if you're in second base and you're standing right behind the pitcher, you can see when the catcher gives the sign. So usually, as I said, for a fastball, it was one because that's the most common pitch. Curveball would be two. If the pitcher has two or three other pitches, you find a way to do four, and then you find other ways to flash because it's hard to get four fingers, you know, to be seen there sometimes. He uses a fist sometimes. Once again, a variety of signs to throw that guy off, because the man from second base can clearly see that. And if he sees what the pitcher is going to throw, and the pitcher nods yes, then he can send a sign to the batter to say, hey, guy, I just saw. He put a number one down there. He's going to throw you a fastball. Be ready for the fastball. Huge advantage. So that's why you will see, when you look from that center field camera, there's a series of signals going on so that it confuses the guy at second base. So he can't really know what's going on. Just because I put a one, but I might put a 1-2 and a 4 and a 1 and a 2 and a 4 and a 1-1 and a 2. And he can't, you know, he's can't be watching that intently. But the pitcher and the catcher know what's going on. So there's a lot going on here, all looking for an advantage. So the television camera, you know, forced the signs between the pitcher and the catcher to become more complex so that if somebody had a television hooked up somewhere in the dugout or in the clubhouse, they would be able to see that sign very quickly and very clearly if they devised the code as to which pitch was coming in that sequence of signs and somehow relay that information in that short period of time. There's not a lot of time to do that, but it can be done. Then if that batter knows that a fastball's coming, huge advantage. Ultimately, that's what happened. The Houston Astros created a system using technology, using a camera, using a monitor in the clubhouse. And then, the best part, with all this technology, the key sign, ultimately, to relay the information from whoever was looking at that monitor in the clubhouse to the batter was to hit a trash can. We have all this high tech going on. We've got monitors looking at there. We've got, you know, the other guys watching through the monitor, all this stuff. And at the end of the day, it was a trash can. Somebody hitting a trash can from the clubhouse that could be heard in the batter's box, and two smashes of a trash can meant fastball or whatever they decided. It was high tech, and then it was schoolyard tech. But apparently it was going on, and it was working. Now, there are even some stories now that some of the players may have even had buzzers taped to their bodies, like, you know, wires that the police, you know, microphones. But this was a buzzer, and there's some kind of technology that whoever was looking at that monitor in the clubhouse then hit another button, and it buzzed on the player's skin, and he felt it. No need for the trash can. Maybe there's a lot of screaming going on. You can't hear the trash can smash, but you certainly can feel this little buzz going on your chest somewhere. So that's how complex it got. At the end of the day, the Houston Astros, over the last several years, won a lot of games during the season. And they got to the playoffs and they won the World Series. A former player who was on those teams, especially in 2017 when they won the World Series, was traded to another team. Oh, he didn't say anything while he was on the team, and he was a member of the team, got a World Series ring. But when he got traded and the teams that he was on now were going to play the Astros, he told his teammates, you know, the Astros have this scene-stealing system. So just beware of it, because they're on to it. They're using it, and it's been successful. Now here's where we get to the cheating and our view of it, because in baseball, it's been a kind of a wink They know that sign stealing is going on, and maybe even more elaborate. But it's always been this idea in most sports, not just baseball, in most sports, cheating goes on. We've seen cheating going on with baseball before with the steroids to have these players bulked up so they can hit the ball farther. We've seen cheating going on, and every sport has cheating. Every athlete looks for an advantage. And the code, once again, there's that word, within sports is that we know what's going on, we self-police it, and it's part of the game. And if you've been privy to that, the code also says that you don't tell anybody. This is our little dirty secret. It's just what we do. We don't tell anybody. We don't tell on each other because we're a team. We're bonded together. And even if you go to another team, you don't tell the secrets of your former team. Because here's the irony. Because if you do that, that would be cheating. Don't you love that? When the cheater then blames someone else for cheating, for breaking their little rules. So you're a cheater. You've already decided to break the rules. And then you've got this unwritten code, a law, if you will. And then someone breaks that and you get mad at them. You don't think that your behavior was wrong. The initial cheating, you're mad at the person who ratted out you. Don't you love that? And this is what I'm talking about now in the bigger sense. So that's where the debate is going now. Now, no one is even denying, and players have been implicated, teams have been fined, managers and general managers who knew that this system was going on have been fired from their jobs, suspended or fired. And even players or managers that went to other teams and implemented the same cheating or were implicated in that initial cheating with the Astros have been fired or resigned because of the scandal. So it's not the last you've heard of the baseball sign stealing scandal. But what I'm more interested in is the reaction to it, because it's been very interesting. And it does make us look at who we are as a culture and where we're going and where we want to go. And because of the internet, we are now hearing how people really feel about cheating. And it's a little disturbing. You know, so much of consequences in our society over the last several years have been lessened. Before, there were consequences for your actions. There were punishments. And we as a society have been getting away from either enforcing those punishments at all or certainly being more lenient on those punishments. And I think it's hurt. We have a much lenient, our culture is much more lenient. And that's why I think it's a lot more dangerous. And then you've seen us, as we usually do, then overcompensate, like when 9/11 happened, right? It was so lenient. There was such a trust here to get on a plane that there was hardly any security. Now we're practically disrobing before we get on a plane because we were lenient before. And, oh, well, that's not the worst thing in the world. That's kind of, oh, well, let's give that person a second chance. And, oh, that, you know, we're putting laws on the books. We're putting rules on the books. But then when people break them, we get mad when they are arbitrarily and correctly administered. Because then, well, yes, you broke the law, but, and this person has a sob story, or this person is this or that. And then depending on how we feel about that person or what law they broke, we either demand zero tolerance or complete tolerance. And that's happening more often. And it's happening more often because now the internet allows us to initially and instantly record how we think about that. all around the world. Our human frailty comes out on that internet, and that does form and shape our views. And so what's so interesting, right out of the box, when this was revealed, and baseball, the people who run baseball, the commissioner and others, were very swift when this came to light, this pitcher who went to another team, and it was revealed in an interview somewhere, I believe. They did their own investigation and found out that what he said was true. And then, of course, they were appalled. They may have known that the sign stealing was going on. But when it was then officially revealed to the public, and then when it was officially confirmed that it was happening, then they took strict measures, fines, suspensions, firings. But they've always probably known it was going on, but the public didn't know. Same thing with steroids. Everybody, there was a guy named Jose Canseco who was hitting home runs at a crazy clip in the 90s. And you could see physically he was huge. And then other players started to get just as huge and start to hit just as many home runs. And after Jose Canseco was out of the game, he said, you know, some of the best players in baseball right now, some of these players that are breaking records, that have stood for decades, are taking steroids. It's helping to make them stronger. That's why they're hitting so many home runs. That's why they're throwing the ball 100 miles an hour on a consistent basis. And some of the greatest players of the day in the 90s and in the early 2000s have been shown to have been using illegal steroids to get an advantage. People in the game knew that was going on. The owners knew it was going on. But it was putting people in the seats. It was making people watch the game more because we're seeing a lot more strikeouts by some incredible power pitchers. Or we were seeing some amazing home runs that were almost superhuman. Well, they were superhuman. So everyone knew the cheating was going on until it was exposed. Same thing here. My question is, when is cheating cheating? It's either cheating or it isn't. There really is no gray line. You either broke the rule or you didn't. You either allow the cheating or you don't. So sports and baseball, and this has gone on in football too, they accused the New England Patriots, again, one of the best teams in football for a long time, for stealing signs and signals using technology. It's funny how the most successful teams wind up getting accused of cheating because they're getting the advantage, but the advantage is working. But we have to decide as a culture now what is cheating and what is not. So the reaction to this baseball sign stealing was very interesting because you had a lot of current and former baseball players saying, what that pitcher did, revealing that this sign stealing, well, he went against the code. He's not he betrayed his teammates and his former team. He betrayed baseball. We will police it ourselves, or we accept that's part of the game. And he went against the code. You don't tell on your former teams or your current teams. We have this in the corporate world. It's called whistleblowers. We're going through an impeachment right now. Why did that happen? Somebody in the Trump administration saw that something that he felt was wrong and revealed it in a report and to the media. He saw something that he felt was against the law, and so he felt it was responsibility to tell. Some people call him a whistleblower. Some people call him a patriot. Some people call him a rat. And that's another thing. That term rat is interesting. The rat is usually somebody who tells, a snitch, right? The snitch is trying, you know, what I love is the you know, and we say, well, that guy's a rat. We have now actually, we have incorporated organized crime mentality into our culture. Oh, he's a rat. They basically, the organized crime people call that person a rat because this person
told on the nefarious things and the law-breaking things that other people were doing. And they said, well, no, you're in our club and you're not supposed to tell. Once again, the cheaters, the lawbreakers, call the other lawbreaker who actually tried to right the situation the rat. The people cheating, the people breaking the law, they don't see anything wrong with that. That's the dichotomy here. That's the disconnect. Same thing here in this baseball scene stealing scandal. Say that three times fast. Sign stealing scandal. Oh, I wish they were doing something else. It would be easier to say it. No. The people that are cheating are mad that they were revealed by one of their own. A snitch. We see this going on every day with gang murders. Innocent people are being killed. And people know, in many cases, who these murderers are. But they won't snitch. They're afraid for their safety, but they're also, they have this bond. We have to decide as a culture because, yes, you know what, at the end of the day, it's not that important who wins and loses a game. But it is when there's, what if this whistleblower didn't say something about Donald Trump and the role of a president? Whether you like Trump or not, that's not the point. Somebody saw something that was going wrong that would not have been revealed if the whistleblower didn't do it. The whistleblower should be commended. But in our society, the whistleblower is many times viewed as a snitch. And it depends on what side you're on. Now, people that hate Trump think the whistleblower is a patriot. People who like Trump think he's a rat. You're not supposed to tell. You're working in the White House and you're on that team. You're not supposed to tell on anybody. But what is cheating? Don't we want an honest system? I know it can't be 100% honest because we're humans and we are imperfect. But shouldn't that be commended? Rather than as a society taking on this organized crime mentality of if you tell on us because we're breaking the law, then you're a rat. That's what you're saying. We're incorporating, you know, crime mentality. People commit crimes as our culture's mentality, as our culture's morality. And now with the internet, we're getting all these different viewpoints, and it's so interesting. So as I said, many current baseball players, as well as former baseball players, they adhere to that code. And so you're hearing some Hall of Famers saying that was wrong. You're seeing analysts say, oh, well, I don't like that. I mean, if you're on your own team, and maybe you say to the people involved, I don't want to be a part of that, or you go to your manager and tell them, but you don't tell someone, you're breaking the code. There's cheating going on. There's breaking of rules going on. This goes on in the schoolyard every day. Are we going to make allowances, make excuses for cheating or not? We're seeing more of this. Technology is helping to bring more of this out. It's also helping people to cheat more, too. That's the other part of the story. With this enhanced ability of technology, we are able to cheat better and more stealthily and more effectively. So we better start worrying about cheating because we can do it better now. Technology has allowed us to do it better. Look at what's going on in the baseball world here. Before, you would just visually look at the coach back in the good old days, and maybe you could pick up a sign, maybe you couldn't. But now there is a sophisticated way using technology to cheat, and cheat effectively. So effectively that it won a World Series, and it won hundreds of games during the season, and made the Houston Astros one of the best teams in baseball for a couple of years. We'll see what happens now. And here's the best part. If something seriously isn't done, they'll just find new ways to cheat. And I have to bring this up. If you're talking about baseball, one of the best players in the history of the game on the field as a player, the one who did, who achieved the most at doing the hardest thing ever, as I said earlier, hardest thing in baseball is to get a hit. The best ones only get a hit 3 out of 10 times. Pete Rose wound up getting more than 4,000 hits in his career, more than any player who ever played the game over the hundreds of years of baseball in existence, and they were keeping records. All the great names you've heard, the Babe Ruths, the Joe DiMaggio's, the Ty Cobbs, Pete Rose has the most hits of any player who ever played baseball, more than 4,000 hits. He's not in the Hall of Fame, and he's been banned from baseball because later in his career, as a manager, he was caught betting on baseball, which is against the rules. No betting of any kind. Now, it's come out that Pete Rose never bet against his team. He didn't manipulate his team to lose in order to win a bet. But because of a huge scandal in 1919, which involved the Chicago White Sox, which then were called the Chicago Black Sox, a movie has been made about it. Eight Men Out. And then later, even part of that was with the Field of Dreams, Shoeless Joe Jackson. But because baseball was in its infancy in 1919, and it was proven that many players on the White Sox in the World Series were paid by organized crime to not play well and to lose the World Series, which happened, which they did, and it was exposed. And baseball, in its infancy, was still in its infancy, was not yet the national pastime per se. And to show that its fans, as it was growing in hopes of being the multi-billion-dollar industry it is today, that this wasn't just some farce going on that gamblers were able to manipulate, the commissioner at the time put down a very bold edict that anybody from now on caught gambling in any way, shape, or form, I don't care, for the team, against the team, is kicked out. And that rule has been kept in place for now almost 100 years. Well, Pete Rose got caught, and so he was banned from baseball, to be associated with baseball, and he has been banned from even being considered for the Hall of Fame. One of the best players ever, the player that did who achieved the most of doing the hardest thing in baseball, getting a hit, he had the most of any player, is not in the Hall of Fame. And also, let's not forget, he did break the rules, no question, but not when he was a player. So let's look at this. He cheated as a manager, but his playing statistics ended when he was a player. So shouldn't he be allowed in based on what he did as a player, which is what the qualifications are for the Hall of Fame? There's a question. Now, if Pete Rose was banned for life for cheating, for supposedly affecting the legitimacy of the game, even though he bet on his team to win, never to lose, why aren't the Houston Astros, every player kicked out who partook in that World Series? Why do the Houston Astros get to keep their World Series ring and keep the title of World Series when it's been proven that they cheated? If you're going to kick out Pete Rose for cheating and breaking the rules, then why not the Houston Astros? What's going on here? Is there a new leniency? We have to decide. Either we defend the rules or we don't. Pete Rose was not very well liked in baseball and by the writers and by everyone else. He was a very confident, cocky, brash guy. So when he got caught stealing, a lot of people in baseball were actually saying, well, this is great. Good for him. He got what even though he was a great player and he got all these hits, but, you know, he got what he was coming because he was a jerk. And it was just an excuse for them to prove their dislike for him. And see, now he won't get in the Hall of Fame. Good for him. But that's not the way. Either rules are If Pete Rose is banned, fine. Then that means the Houston Astros are banned. This is what I'm saying. We have to begin to get consistent on if we break rules or not. If we allow cheating or we don't. It's very black and white. We are adding the gray to it. And we are adding the gray to a snitch. If somebody, in quote, snitches or whistleblows on someone we don't like, we commend them. If someone snitches on somebody or blows a whistle on something or someone we do like, we don't like that person. What? What's going on here, folks? We are talking about our society and our culture. And the internet is having a huge, social media is having a huge influence because we're starting to hear how people really feel. And what you're hearing, what you're seeing from people is that many people are falling into these camps. They're not deciding that a law is a law. More people today are looking into the surrounding circumstances and deciding, well, yes, he broke the law, she broke the law, but... But it depends on case by case, whether we like this person or whether we don't. What I'm saying is this is another example of the law of the public forum as opposed to the laws on the books, the laws of public opinion. And the public opinion, because we are in our genetic code, imperfect, and we all cheat on something. We even go over the speed limit, right? Even if something as small as that, we do that on a daily basis. And we rationalize that. I need to get somewhere else. This guy's going too slow. But we have, and then we get caught, we get mad, right? But now, as a culture, we are beginning to make decisions and showing future and younger generations what's right and what's wrong based on how we're acting and how we are acting toward people that break the law and cheating. We got to start looking at ourselves, gang. We have to decide as a society, as a culture, whether the whistleblower is commended or derided. If cheating is okay or it's never right. Because we're going to start seeing more cheating going on. Look at what happened with the college entrance exams. Cheating. With the two actresses, Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughlin. Cheating. We're seeing it happen more often. We have to decide here, folks. You can't, either it's against the law or not. And social media, I think, is chipping away at the right and wrong of it. Because everybody loves, well, I mean, you know, I like Lori Loughlin. And, oh, you know, it's either cheating or it isn't. They either stole the signs illegally or not. They either got their kids into school illegally or not. Pete Rose either bet on baseball or not. All I'm saying is, let's start to look a little harder at cheating and let's be a little more consistent in how we treat those who have cheated and those who have informed us about the cheating. This goes to the heart of our culture, folks. It's about laws and behavior and how we get together. And do you want to live in a society where everybody's cheating? And they get a slap on the wrist? Or in a more orderly society where fairness is looked at as a virtue and not getting away with cheating is? I don't know the answer myself, but we better start thinking about it or we're going to be cheating ourselves. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNplus.com or appears wherever you download your favorite podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to that platform, rate this podcast, and most importantly, spread it and tell your friends, because that's the best way that you can spread the word about Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. I hope you enjoyed episode 192. I certainly did. Your loyalty and your devotion is much appreciated. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. This has been Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screens.